Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio.
Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeart Podcasts, and how the tech are ya? It is Friday, January 26th, 2024, and I thought maybe we would talk about some tech news. And we've got a lot of news that we could touch on due to the fact that I was out of commission for most of the month, but I figure we're just going to focus on what's recent. So first up, this week Tesla held an earnings call, and the results didn't fill investors with optimism. The company did not meet market expectations last quarter, and Elon Musk indicated that 2024 is likely to be a slower year than what the company had hoped for. So in response, investors lost a little bit of confidence in the EV company, and stock prices dropped around 12%. Tesla is currently working on a new vehicle, which is codenamed Redwood. This EV is said to be targeted for like a lower price point. It's meant to be a mass market vehicle, and it's rumored to be in the compact crossover category. Musk said it'll actually be sometime in the second half of 2025 when its Texas manufacturing facility will actually begin production. He also indicated that Tesla employees should anticipate some very long work days leading up to that production. He flat out said they should expect to work long shifts and sleep at the manufacturing plant. Once again, Musk shows he has a firm grasp on how to motivate a workforce. In the meantime, investors continue to worry about their nest eggs, and they shoot ugly glances at Musk whenever he gets bogged down in X/Twitter drama, which, as you imagine, happens a lot. Next up, I've got a whole bunch of social network-related news, but mercifully, I've left out the stuff about X because, honestly, the recent X news is just so ugly I can't even. So first up, Meta announced that its platforms, Facebook and Instagram, will automatically block any direct messages sent to teenage users unless those messages come from someone who is already a friend of that user on those platforms. And this applies even if both of the users are teenagers. So if teen A sends teen B a DM, but they aren't already friends on these platforms, teen B will not get that message. However, if they are friends on the platform, the message will go through. Also, for Facebook Messenger, it's a little different. If teen B is in teen A's phone contacts, from what I understand, the message would then go through. But they have to already be confirmed friends or contacts with each other. The age barrier is dependent upon the country you're in. So in some countries, this will only impact users who are under the age of 16. In a few other countries, that age is actually up to 18. This is not a perfect system because I don't know if you've heard about this, but there's this thing called lying in which someone could tell a social platform that they're older when in fact they are not. I know it's insidious, right? Meta does have some systems in place that are designed to predict a person's age to try and head that thing off to determine, hey, is this person actually the age that they claim to be? But I have no clue how good it is. How reliable is this tech? I don't know. And considering how some of my grown-ass friends act like they're five-year-olds, I'm really curious how any AI system can figure out anything at all. Meta has been under a ton of scrutiny and litigation regarding how it can impact users, particularly young users. And clearly, this is a move to try and mollify some of the company's harshest critics. If you'd like to learn more, I recommend Mariella Moon's article, Facebook and Instagram Will Block DMs to Teens Unless They're From a Friend, and that is on the site Engadget. Gizmodo's Thomas Germain has what is, in my opinion, a justifiably snarky article titled NYC Mayor Calls Social Media an Environmental Toxin, Announces It on Social Media. Oh, the irony. So Germain explains that Mayor Eric Adams of the Big Apple took to the podium, as well as the internets, to declare social media a public menace, something akin to guns and tobacco, which just makes me think that like our forefathers in the U.S. would have traded these things back in the day. You know, you ship guns and tobacco and social media across the frontier. Anyway, Mayor Adams was arguing that social platforms have made choices that have caused direct or indirect harm to young people. And honestly, I do think there is some truth in that. We've talked on the show about how algorithms can reinforce messaging that at the very least is unhealthy or promotes misinformation. And these social platforms use algorithms in order to drive engagement and to keep people tied to their services for as long as is possible, all to serve as many ads to them as is possible. And to the platforms, it doesn't really matter if the messages they serve are good or bad or whatever. They're kind of amoral when it comes to that. They just want the messages to be effective, to keep them there and to keep them engaged. It doesn't matter what other impact the messages might have. If the bad messages are more effective at keeping people there than good messages are, well, them's the breaks. So yeah, I do think these networks have engaged in activities that are harmful to users, not just young ones. Old ones like me too. I mean, it's the reason why you don't find me on nearly any social media these days. Now, Germain in his article makes a solid point. There does appear to be a correlation between social media use and a decline in mental health. But we all know correlation is not the same thing as causation. It's a leap to say that one is causing the other, and that is valid. It's possible that social media, you know, dependency does lead to poor mental health. That is possible. It's also possible that people who already have poor mental health find themselves drawn to using social media more. So it doesn't become causal in one direction. Maybe it's in the other. Maybe the situation is far more complicated than any of that. So Germain goes on to point out how social platforms can and do exacerbate real problems in our real world, like the spread of hate speech or misinformation. So there are valid reasons to be concerned about social media. Though honestly, we have to remember, these platforms, they're facilitators. It's not like they're magically generating this material, right? The material's not originating out of the platforms. Regular old humans are doing this, sometimes with the help of AI. So sometimes it's AI boosted human efforts to spread misery. But the platforms just make it really easy to deliver and spread the messaging. And Germain rightly points out that even Mayor Adams points out, we don't know to what extent or what in what way social media actually interacts with mental health. It just appears to have a negative
a relationship, but we don't really know very much about that. But Mayor Adams is convinced that it's bad and it should be addressed. So I recommend reading the article. I don't 100% agree with Jermaine's point of view, but I feel like we're more in agreement than otherwise. I just think we differ a tiny bit toward the tail end of the matter. But I'm also quick to say, you know, Jermaine may be more right than I am. But go check out that article to learn more. Katie Kindelin of Good Morning America on ABC News wrote an article titled "Florida House of Representatives Approves Bill to Ban Social Media for Kids Under 16. So here we see another example of lawmakers taking a stand against these companies and their networks. The bill will actually need to go to the state's Senate for approval, and then if approved, it would then go to the governor's desk to be signed into law or vetoed, whichever the governor decides, although I think DeSantis would probably uphold this one. Kindelin points out that the bill passed with an overwhelming majority in the House, 106 to 13, and that the bill received a good deal of bipartisan support. And that's understandable. Again, there's this perception that social networks are hurting users, particularly young ones. So the bill would make it illegal for these platforms to grant accounts to any Floridian user under the age of 16, something that I suspect will be difficult to enforce. I mean, a kid in Florida could either lie about their age or maybe where they live in order to get around this block. Sure, a network like Facebook could take note of a person's physical location while they attempt to make an account, but who's to say you couldn't make an account while you happen to be on vacation? Like, if I happen to be a 15-year-old kid from Georgia and I'm deciding that I want to make a Facebook account while I'm vacationing in Florida, maybe because I'm surrounded by old people and it's rubbing off on me, I should be able to do that, right? Because I'm not a citizen of Florida. But maybe that Florida law would argue that it covers everyone under the age of 16 who's in the state, whether they happen to be a citizen of the state or not. Anyway, I don't think it's really enforceable. I also don't think it addresses the root problem. Like I said, these networks, they exacerbate things that are already out there. And cutting off the networks doesn't stop the harm. At best, it just slows it down. Anyway, we'll follow up on this story once we know where it goes when it passes through the state Senate, or if it doesn't pass. We'll check back then. One story that passed me by while I was recovering from my little adventure through the American healthcare system was that a media company called Dudezy released a video on YouTube that ruffled a lot of feathers because of how it used AI to quote-unquote resurrect a beloved comedian who passed away years ago. That comedian was George Carlin, a man known for making shrewd, satirical, and often hilarious observations about culture, politics, media, and everything else. He had a reputation for pointing out hypocrisy and holding it up for public scrutiny. Well, the media company created an hour-long comedy special featuring what they claimed to be was an AI-generated impression of Carlin. So, according to the video, the voice, the content, the cadence, the delivery, all of it came courtesy of AI attempting to copy Carlin's style while generating new material. Now, Carlin's estate has filed a lawsuit against this media company, arguing that Dudezy has infringed upon copyright and has effectively stolen a personality. The estate seeks damages and also the immediate removal of this video. So Carlin's estate also argues that the special harms the comedian's reputation and that it does represent theft. It's one of the most high-profile examples of creatives criticizing AI content generation and arguing that the whole enterprise depends upon plagiarism and that it stands as a threat to anyone who's actually in a creative field. This is one of the big concerns that both the Writers Guild of America and SAG-AFTRA had in their recent strikes against producers in Hollywood, that studios could use AI to bypass real human creatives entirely while making something that lacks the soul, sincerity, wit, and creativity of human endeavor. If you'd like to learn more, I recommend checking out J. Kim Murphy's article, "George Carlin Estate Files Lawsuit Against Group Behind AI-Generated Stand-Up Special, A Casual Theft of a Great American Artist's Work." That's in Variety. Wired's Paresh Dave has an article titled,
OpenAI quietly scrapped a promise to disclose key documents to the public, and I think it's well worth reading. It's another illustration of how the OpenAI of today appears to be quite different from the original concept of the organization. So back in the idealistic days, the company's founders, which at the time included Elon Musk, intended OpenAI to be a research center committed to advancing AI technologies in a responsible, safe, and helpful way, and to share its findings with the world to best ensure that we all enter a future in which AI provides the most benefit and the fewest terminators, and that requires a certain level of transparency. However, it seems that OpenAI has now drifted a bit from those ideals, which reminds me a lot of Google. Once upon a time, Google famously had a motto that read, "Don't be evil," as part of its corporate conduct. In fact, it was in the preface for its corporate conduct and was up on the walls of certain Google buildings. But Google took that motto off the preface and the walls and then just sort of buried it at the end of the corporate conduct statement. So it's still there, but it's just now it's at the end of it, not prominently at the very beginning. And it kind of was an indicator that Google had changed its approach. Well, anyway, Wired sent a request for documents from OpenAI back in December of last year, and they received a response saying that OpenAI's policy of sharing governing documents has changed, that it changed back in 2022, and now the company only sends financial statements. As Wired points out, this could be one of several changes that prompted the former board of directors of OpenAI to suddenly fire co-founder and CEO Sam Altman last year. Of course, that decision didn't last very long, and soon afterward, the entire board of directors almost had changed, and Sam Altman was back in the saddle. But my point is, it looks like OpenAI has changed, perhaps gradually, to a point that it's at odds with the original founding mission of the company, and that the board was uncomfortable with how things were going. It seems a bit like a boiling frog situation. You know, that idea that you got a frog in water, and you just gradually increase the temperature of the water until the frog is done dead from being boiled, and it never hopped out because, you know, you were increasing that temperature so gradually, you sicko. Anyway, I recommend the article to learn more about how things have changed, as well as what this could possibly mean for OpenAI and the way that companies tackle AI development in general. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got a lot more tech news to go through.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
We're back and still have a couple of AI things to chat about. So Scott Foster of Asia Times has a short article titled Samsung to Build All AI, No Human Chip Factories. So, yes, the future of an all-robot, all-automated manufacturing facility is around the corner, it would seem. It's still going to take some time. Right now, the projected launch date would be sometime around 2030. If it works, then the manufacturing plant won't rely on human labor at all. AI will design and build and package products all by itself. Oh, brave new world to have no people in it. The Washington Post reported this week that the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, and the Department of Justice, the DOJ, here in the United States, the U.S., are investigating GM's Cruise division. That is the division that's in charge of developing, deploying, and operating driverless vehicles, which have been used as a ride-hailing service. Last year, one of the Cruise vehicles was involved in an accident, and it included an incident in which the Cruise vehicle struck a pedestrian and dragged her for 20 feet at approximately 7 miles per hour. While the vehicle should have immediately come to a stop after striking the pedestrian, in fact, it shouldn't have struck the pedestrian at all, but once doing so, it should have stopped. Instead, it mistakenly interpreted the accident as one that impacted the car's side, and so it was attempting to pull over and get out of traffic. The pedestrian suffered additional injuries due to this error, as you can imagine. I mean, if you're being dragged behind a car at 7 miles per hour, that's like twice the speed of walking. That's going to hurt. So the next day, government officials met with the company to investigate the incident, which makes sense. And at that meeting, Cruise employees failed to, you know, mention that their car had dragged a person 20 feet down the road at 7 miles per hour. So instead, their narrative largely focused on another vehicle, a Nissan that was under human control that was also involved in this accident. And the implication appeared to be that Cruise was saying it was really the driver of the Nissan. It was their fault for the pedestrian's injuries and that the Cruise vehicle really wasn't to blame. Now, according to Cruise, their intention was to show a video of the incident to officials. And this video presumably would have included the fact that the pedestrian had been dragged behind the Cruise vehicle. But a problem with their internet meant they couldn't get the video to play. And then Cruise employees just sort of, you know, didn't mention it. They didn't say, hey, you know, the video would have shown this and we probably should tell you that our car dragged her for 20 feet. They didn't. They didn't cover the gap that was left by this lack of video, which seems pretty darn horrifying, not to mention stupid. I mean, you'd have to assume that the truth would come out, and it did. So not being forthcoming and bringing it up yourself makes you look even worse, which it has, at least in my opinion, it has. Anyway, since that incident, the division of Cruise has changed quite a bit. Co-founder Daniel Kahn resigned from Cruise. Kyle Vogt, the CEO, left the company, and GM also downsized nearly a quarter of the staff working at Cruise. So just another example of what can happen when AI goes wrong, not to mention when people fail to acknowledge when AI has gone wrong. Next up, Apple is loosening its grip on iOS a little bit, but only if you happen to live in the European Union. This is, of course, so that Apple will be in compliance with regulations that passed in the EU just last year, and Apple is not happy about it. So it's not like the company had some sort of massive change of heart or anything. In fact, Apple representatives have indicated in plain English that the company feels this is a terrible, terrible mistake. But the changes mean that for the first time, EU iPhone users will be able to install fully featured browsers other than Safari on their iPhones. So you have to understand that these browsers run on top of browser engines, kind of like how game engines provide a foundation for certain types of video games. And that's why certain video games feel very different from others, is that they might be built on top of a different game engine. Well, browsers are built on top of browser engines. And on iPhones, at least up until now, all browsers needed to run on top of the WebKit browser engine. However, several competing browsers typically would use a totally different browser engine to underlie their functionality. So in order to comply with Apple's requirements and to be able to run on Apple devices, these other browsers had to make a version of their browser that could run on top of WebKit. And sometimes that meant they had to shed features that would work on their browser in order to be compatible with WebKit. But now EU iPhone users can have other browser engines on them, which means these alternatives like Google Chrome will be able to exist fully featured on iOS devices for the first time. Now that's just one change that's happening with iPhones and other iOS devices in the EU. Another is that Apple is going to allow users to sideload apps onto their devices for the first time. Sideloading is when you go to some third-party source for apps, so you're not going to the official iOS app store. In the past, Apple only let you download apps from the official store unless you went to some sort of extreme. Like if you did a jailbreak on your iPhone, which was not easy to do and sometimes could break your phone, then you had to get all of your apps from the iOS store. However, now EU users will be able to access third-party apps or third-party stores in order to get apps. And Apple says this is dangerous. For the Apple's longest running statement on this is that the reason why they have this draconian control over where you can get your apps on your phone is in order to protect you. It's because you as a user are far too vulnerable and you're just a naive little fawn dancing through the woods. And meanwhile, there are predators all around you. So Apple says that allowing people to sideload apps is a compromise to privacy and security, but they have to do it. They have to comply with these EU rules. So regulators have said the reason why they've got to comply is because the policy Apple had in place gave it a monopolistic hold on its app system, and that this would open up the app environment. And it'll be interesting to see what it all looks like a year from now. So will the EU show how an open environment benefits customers, or will the entire continent be reduced to cinders because regulators allowed chaos to reign unchecked? We'll just have to wait and see. Recently, Netflix revealed that one place you will not be able to access its content is on the upcoming mixed reality headset from Apple called the Vision Pro. You won't even be able to launch the iPad version of the Netflix app on the Vision Pro when it launches next week, at least not as it stands right now. You will be able to access Netflix if you use the Vision Pro and you go through Safari. So if you actually do the web browser version, but you won't have a native app for the headset, nor will you be able to use the iPad version. So according to 9to5 Mac, Netflix's CEO, actually just one of Netflix's CEO, there are co-CEOs, Greg Peters, he said that the Vision Pro is quote unquote subscale. By that he means there wouldn't be enough units in circulation and enough interest among the owners of those units to justify building out an experience meant just for that platform. It would cost more than what they would make back from the people who actually owned these devices. Sick burn. It's interesting to me because for a very long time, I would joke that Netflix's strategy was to get on every single screen it could, whether that screen was on a smartphone or a tablet, or it was part of a video game console, or maybe a smart refrigerator, or perhaps your washing machine. So for Netflix to say, yeah, we figure that this is not a good return on investment when it comes to the Vision Pro, it seems, at least initially, to be a pretty big slap to Apple's face. But then we figure that Apple isn't producing a huge number of these things. It's probably in the tens of thousands. And the fact that they cost more than $3,000 a pop means it is going to be a niche product for the most part. There are always Apple fanatics. There are developers who are interested in the platform. There are companies that are interested in the platform. But still, it's kind of phenomenal in a world where we worry about inflation, and there's been so much talk about inflation and making sure that you're spending money wisely, that people are still willing to spend thousands of dollars on an unproven mixed reality headset that appears to be a huge compromise from Apple's original quote-unquote vision. It blows my mind. I guess I shouldn't be surprised. There are people who have way more money than they have sense. And I guess that's always going to be the case. Anyway, if you bought a Vision Pro, by the way, no shade on you. Like, you probably have legit reasons why you did. I'm just still flabbergasted that they sold all of the pre-production units, or at least all the ones that they plan on manufacturing in the near future. Anyway, it's still pretty fair to say that it would be a difficult sell to make something specific for the Vision Pro just because the user base is going to be small. In fact, that's probably going to be a big challenge for Apple moving forward, convincing developers to spend the time and money it takes to create new apps for the Vision Pro, knowing that there's a limited reach, like there's just a limited user base. And are these developers willing to perhaps take a loss on that initial launch group in the hopes that it will establish a foundation for a larger customer base moving forward? I don't know the answer to that. I know that if I were developing apps, I would be thinking twice before creating something for the Vision Pro, just because I could spend that same amount of time and effort developing for established platforms and actually know that I have a good chance of making a return on my investment rather than doing something that might work out. But then it's Apple. You know, Apple's got such a long track record of making technology work when nobody else could make it work before them. It's hard for me to say. Anyway, it's going to be interesting to see how things unfold once the product launches next week. And I'm very curious to hear people's, you know, honest reviews of it. I have a suspicion that the actual experience of using the device is pretty darn impressive, but I'm not sure it will be enough to convince someone like me to start setting money aside to buy it. I just don't think it's enough for me yet. Anyway, that's enough about that. We're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, I've got a little bit more news to finish off with. So we'll be back right after these messages.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Okay, we're back, and we got a little bit of an inspiring but sort of sad story, and that is the Ingenuity helicopter has flown its final mission on Mars. This was the little drone copter that could, and it last flew on January 18th. It briefly lost contact with the Perseverance Land Rover, that's the vehicle that it launched with way back in the day, but the two regained connectivity a little bit later, and at that point NASA engineers discovered that at least one of Ingenuity's rotors had broken during its final flight, so it will go flying no more. But this little sucker had already achieved far more than what NASA initially hoped. Now let's set aside the fact that NASA occasionally sets modest goals with the hopes of exceeding them, kind of following in the footsteps of engineer Scotty on Star Trek, who would always say he would under-promise and over-deliver. That way it always seemed like he was a genius, right? If he says, ugh, I have it to you in 3 hours, and then like in an hour later he gets it done, it looks like he just really busted his butt and got it done. NASA kind of follows the same thing. Like, they're careful with setting mission parameters because space is hard, y'all. Like, I don't want to take anything away from NASA. Being able to do anything successfully in a space-oriented mission is a huge achievement. So being careful with your goals is a good thing. So initially, NASA's mission parameters for Ingenuity were for it to do 5 test flights over the course of 30 days. That was it. They thought, if we can do 5, like, we don't even know if we can take off once because Mars's atmosphere is really thin. So you have to, you know, being able to provide enough lift to get even a light drone off the ground is challenging. You don't have the thickness of atmosphere that you would have in a place like Earth. But by the end of Ingenuity's time on Mars, it had flown 72 times. Phenomenal. It had even survived Martian winter. Like, there was concern that the cold of Mars's winter would really shut down all of Ingenuity's systems. And it did, but NASA was able to reheat those systems and to reboot Ingenuity's computer systems and have it still be operational. They even sent updates to Ingenuity's capabilities. Like, they gave it firmware updates, and it suddenly was able to do more autonomous activities like identifying safe landing zones. It even did a couple of emergency landings and did so successfully. It's just fantastic. And it means that there was this huge amount of information and practical experience that NASA was able to gather that they can then use to build into future missions. And when you start to think about how far drone technology has come over the last decade, because Ingenuity's planning started like back in 2012. When you think about how far we've come with those advancements, it really makes you get excited about the future of space exploration and space travel, because we can apply what we know as well as the advances in that technology to create even better, more capable drones in the future and use them to conduct science that in the past would have been impossible for us. So honestly, my hat is off for Ingenuity and the team behind it. Y'all did good. This was an incredible achievement. One that I don't think I would have imagined I would have seen in my lifetime. So I'm so pleased that I'm wrong about that. Now, that wraps up the main news items. But before I go, I do have a couple of article recommendations for you on top of the ones I've mentioned already in this episode. Both of these recommendations involve upsetting stories. So these are not happy stories. And first up is a piece by Janice Rose of Motherboard. And it's an article that's titled, "Taylor Swift is Living Every Woman's AI Porn Nightmare." And as the title suggests, this is about deepfake technology and how it enables people to dehumanize victims. And let's face it, most of these victims are women or they are female presenting. And they use these to create all sorts of AI-generated pornographic images, and then they spread them online. And lots of platforms have served as kind of distribution centers. X is a big one. Reddit used to be, they've gotten better at cutting back on that. But yeah, there are places online where this just sort of runs rampant. You're not surprised that it does so on X because Elon Musk famously cut way back on content moderation when he acquired that company and has shown very little interest in addressing these things. So it becomes an ongoing issue over there. I think the article is a really important read, and it does tie in with some of the threads that I've mentioned in the George Carlin story in this episode, right? This idea of using AI to victimize people in various ways. The deepfake stuff is really disturbing. It's been really troubling to me for a couple of years now, and it's only getting worse. And obviously, the sexualization is one element of deepfake technology, but there are other facets too, right? Like there's the potential of using deepfakes to spread misinformation. It's a really troubling topic, but I think it's an important article to read. Again, that's called Taylor Swift is Living Every Woman's AI Porn Nightmare. It's on Motherboard or Vice, if you prefer. It's by Janice Rose. The other article I want to recommend is from our old buddy, Thomas Germain. And by old buddy, I don't know Thomas Germain at all. We just mentioned one of his articles earlier in this episode. This is on Gizmodo. The article is titled, iPhone Apps Secretly Harvest Data When They Send You Notifications, Researchers Find. So yeah, not happy, right? Like to find out that just by receiving a notification, an app may be gathering information about you. In fact, is gathering information about you. And the implications that has on your own privacy and security. It's not fun to read about, but I think it is important to know about, particularly if you have any concern at all about privacy and security. Now, as always, I have no connection to these reporters, to the writers, journalists, to the outlets. I just find their work to be interesting and worth reading. So go check that out. And that wraps up this tech news episode for this week on January 26, 2024. I hope all of you are well. I'm getting better every day, which is nice. It's a nice change of pace. And I'll talk to you again really soon. Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.